Comic Timing is proudly sponsored by the New York Comic Con. New York Comic Con is bigger, better, and has double the space with more gaming and anime for 2007. Come to the Jacob Javits Center February 23rd to 25th and experience the biggest pop culture event in New York City, featuring comics, anime, manga, graphic novels, video games, trading card games, RPGs, MMOs, toys, movies, TV, celebrities, and more. Guest of honors include Stan Lee, Jeff Smith, J. Michael Straczynski, and George Perez, with many more to be announced. For a complete list of guests, as well as show information, please visit nycomiccon.com. Buy your tickets online now to ensure your spot for the 2007 show. Tickets are available now at a discounted rate for advance purchase at nycomiccon.com. You can also book your travel arrangements online now on the travel page of the website. Don't miss out on the 2007 New York Comic Con. Visit our website to get all the information you need.
Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 24 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levinson, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Time. Well, Matt's back from a week hiatus, and we are joined by Bruce Rosenberger from the Comics Cast podcast as we discuss comic book animation, good, the bad, and the ugly, what's worth it, what's not, and what is coming up soon that we are highly anticipating. Here now, Comic Time. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 24 of Comic Timing, getting closer to episode 30 as time goes on. We are joined by the man from the land of beer with about an hour to go until the big office episode tonight. He is Matt S.
How's it going, Ian?
Going pretty well, man. Going pretty well, and I'm sure that you're anxiously awaiting the office closure, man.
Yeah, that's what I heard. The show's over. It's closing up.
Damn. NBC and those cancellations, man. You never know.
Spoilers.
Oh, noes. But, yeah, we're talking about comic book animation today, and later on in the episode, we'll be joined by Bruce Rosenberger of the Comics Cast podcast, if I can ever get his name out, and he'll be giving his take on stuff. But here's our take on stuff for now. Animation and comic books have been hand-in-hand for years. The quality of the product has varied significantly over time, ranging from terrific to campy and cheesy. What place does animation have in the market today when pertaining to comic books? Would you rather watch an animation with a comic book tie-in or a comic book with an animation tie-in? What are your favorites, your least favorites, and your guilty pleasure? And finally, where do you see the market of comic book animation ending up 10 years down the line? Will these ventures end up on TV, the internet, DVD, or all of the above? So, Matt, your favorite, what is it?
Like I said, man, you're putting me on the spot here, but... you know, it's hard to say because there's different eras of different things. Like, originally I'd said that, you know, my favorite nostalgia pick, because it just happened to coincide with when I first started collecting, was the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Yeah.
Even though that show made absolutely no sense whatsoever. I mean, we have Spider-Man and then we have Iceman for some reason.
Of course,
And then a totally made-up character.
Firestar.
Eventually weaseled their way into the comics. I mean, that show, looking back on it now as an adult, it's pretty much crap. Just watch the Video Man episode if you have any doubts of the quality of that show. But, I mean, at the time, what made it great for me as a comic fan was just simply the fact that the show was one of the first that really worked in a lot of crossovers with the Marvel characters in the universe in general. There was one episode where they had a crossover with some other obscure characters like Captain America and Namor. Yeah. And
never heard of these guys. So.
And some other people at the end. And you know, of course, the famous episode where they had the X-Men crossover in the Australian Wolverine.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
It was pure gold, and which led into that whole retarded juggernaut bitch thing. Anyway, you know, that show at the time, that for me, that was the best comic book show around, simply because of that reason, to see some of those, you know, characters that you just hadn't seen in cartoons before.
Sure, yeah.
Growing up, getting a little more mature in my tastes, I gotta say, and I didn't watch the whole thing, but the first season, the first, like, 13 episodes of the Tick cartoon.
Oh, nice.
I was a huge fan of the comic book, the 12 only issues that ever came out of that, and that show I was a fan of at the time, and again, it got a little too far from the source material, I guess, at some point for me, and I kind of gave up on it. But
yeah,
the original series, the first season, was great. And, man, I'm trying to think of what else. Now, see, this is where we're going to have to cross swords a little bit, because I've never been a fan of the whole, and I'm going to put this out there right now, so you can kill me if you want, but
I've never
been a fan of the whole Bruce Timm style animation that DC has done.
Wow.
So, never been in love with Batman, the animated series, never really watched the Superman series. I did, however, get into JLU.
Okay.
Not the previous two seasons of the Justice League cartoon, but...
Yeah.
But the JLU incarnation, I did appreciate that. I don't know what it was, man. For some reason, I could just not get into the Batman cartoon. I know that's almost impossible to admit that.
Was it just too cartoony for you? Or
well, I mean... you know what I think what it was is for me is that it really, the show really kind of got into this, I'm not going to say campy because that's not really what I mean, but
yeah.
The whole like overexposure of the Joker and Harley Quinn, that whole thing, I really was annoyed by those characters, the way that they're portrayed on the cartoon.
Yeah.
For some reason, and just the fact that they kept using them over and over again, and it was just like, I don't know. Everyone loved it, and for some reason, it just rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know what else to say.
Well, we're joined now by Bruce Rosenberger of the Comics Cast podcast and the Comics Podcast Crossover. Bruce, how you doing? You there, Bruce?
Good.
Oh, he's apparently sleeping.
There we go.
Bruce had the mute button on.
Ha ha ha. How you doing, Bruce?
Oh, fine. How about you guys?
Doing very well, man. Doing very well.
What'd you get to eat there, Bruce?
Some kind of a seafood thing. I wasn't impressed.
Oh, okay. Oh, man. Oh, well. Well, at least you got to spend some time with the family. That's important. So,
yeah,
we were just talking about how, you know, Matt has a dislike for the Bruce Timm universe of the Batman the Animated Series and Superman the Animated Series. So we're getting ready to put him up against the wall. I have my guns ready, so we can just put him out of his misery now. I don't know, but...
Wow. up until this moment, I've respected Matt's opinion so much, you know?
Oh, yeah. Boy.
What can I say? I mean, I gave it a shot, and I watched the first season brand new when it first came out, and I don't know what it was. Just for some reason, it just, I don't know, it didn't do it for me.
And I'm sorry, Matt, which was that, the JLU?
No, we're talking about the Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah, he liked the JLU portion of Justice League, but not the first two seasons as Justice League of America.
Well, I just didn't watch them, that's all.
Okay.
I didn't really dislike them.
Okay.
I just didn't catch them.
Well, I would actually recommend the second season, not the first season of the Justice League of America, because this first season is utter torture. But once you get into that, yeah, that was terrible. But the second season, when they start getting into multi-episode arcs and stuff, it works really well. But before then, not really too much. I don't know. I mean, Bruce, were you a fan of the Bruce Timm verse, as it were?
Well, okay, if you put it in perspective, when they first came out, I thought they were really good.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back on them, the first year is really weak compared to, what was it, the third season when they kind of redesigned the characters?
Yeah.
Added Nightwing. Oh, my God. That, I mean, that's just beautiful. You know, that's just really nice stuff. But
that was the Gotham Knights portion.
Exactly, yeah. But, I mean, I got to say, Matt, looking back at those early ones, they're not nearly as good as...
I think that's what happened is that I watched the first season and just kind of got... turned off, and I know that, like you said, it sounds like it got better as it went along.
Well, that's something that people need to be wary of these days, and even, you know, over the years, the first season has to be good to get you in. I mean, if that first season's not good, you're not going to watch season 2, season 3, season 4, and eventually you're going to get canceled. I mean, that might have very well been the case with Justice League of America. As I stated, the first season was not that good. It turned a lot of people off to it. A lot of people then came back with Justice League Unlimited, but not nearly as many from when it first started, and it could be one of the reasons why it's no longer on the air right now.
Well, I have to agree with you, Ian. I mean, you know, the JLA... was okay. I mean, I didn't go out of my way to watch it. And then when I heard the Justice League Unlimited was coming along and that they were going to add all these characters, I gave it another shot. And that I fell in love with because it was just so much fun.
Yeah.
You know, I think that appeals to more of the crusty fans like us, perhaps, that, you know, I mean, it's just like a geekgasm. Where are you ever going to expect to see, you know, a cartoon version of Vigilante or The Shining Knight or Spy Smasher in that one flashback episode?
Oh, man.
I mean, it's just, that's the kind of stuff that you know, it was exciting to see all these kind of B-list characters, to see my favorite, you know, Booster Gold, God rest his soul, character in a cartoon. I never thought that would happen. And I will mention, though, I don't know if you guys, speaking of Booster Gold, I don't know if you've been watching the new Legion of superheroes cartoon, but I just noticed today that he makes an appearance in the background of episode 1.
Really?
Yes, he is doing his janitorial duties in the Superman Museum in the 31st century.
That's terrific, man. That is absolutely fantastic. See, now I'm going to have to go back and watch that first episode to see if... Because I've been avoiding the Legion of Superheroes series, to tell you the truth, because I really didn't like the promo art, and I'm not sure if it really, like, suited me too well. And I hated the fact that they didn't go with the Supergirl and the Legion of Superheroes that they set up in JLU. Or they just completely abandoned that and goes with, quote-unquote, Superman. I say quote-unquote because he's 15 years old in this series. They're still calling him Superman. But, I don't know, there's just something wrong with that. I mean, Bruce, would you have rather seen a Supergirl and the Legion of Superheroes than Superman, Superboy?
Yeah, I got to admit, I think that would be that'd probably be more entertaining. But I also have to say that I watched the first episode, and I liked the tack that they were taking, that he was learning his superpowers.
Yeah.
That's only going to go so far.
Sure.
You know, I mean, if by the 15th episode he's still having trouble flying, I'm going to have a problem.
Well, so you did, as long as we're talking about that, I guess we can bring it up, because I'll lay down my background with this. Like I said, I enjoyed JLU. I'm probably one of the biggest fans ever of the Wolfman Perez era Teen Titans.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat with my friend watching the premiere episode of the Teen Titans cartoon when it first aired, and I put a spoon through my eye.
So that's why you have that eye patch now. Okay.
Exactly. I hated that show. I hated the art style, and, you know, being an anime snob, I hated the fake anime aspect of the show. It just seemed like it was spitting in the face of this awesome run of comics that I loved. And I just could not get into it, could not get into the art style, could not get into the goofy story, the super deformed characters, you know, the gigantic heads on people every once in a while. Now, again, I hear people talking about how it got so much better and it got great, you know, whatever. But my point of that is that being kind of sick of the whole Bruce Timm look,
yeah,
of all the DC cartoons from the last 10 years, when that new The Batman show came out, I did sort of enjoy the look. I know some people, you know, don't think it matches up to the original. I like the fresh take on the show, and I like the art style. But again, I haven't watched that many episodes of it. And that's when the Legion, like you said, the promo art came out, it sort of looked like a cross between the Batman character designs and mm-hmm. the Teen Titan character designs,
yeah,
which did not thrill me.
Mm-hmm.
But and so I've been sitting on the first two episodes until just today, and I actually sat down and watched them both in preparation for talking on the show today. And I got to say, I don't know, it grew on me. I enjoy the first episode, and Bruce, you say you saw it as well. Now, it deals again, I mean, this is pretty Silver Age-y. In its tone, I mean, it's pretty similar to the way that the Legion encountered Superboy, you know, in the old Silver Age comics. Not exactly, of course, but pretty close. And he is a young guy, and it really did, as I was saying to Ian before, I found it really kind of lame and offensive that rather than give the Seagulls a couple of bucks, that DC just refused to use the Superboy name, and they called him Superman in the cartoon.
When you're 15 years old and you just hit puberty, you're not Superman.
But, you know, it's fun, and I like some of the characters, and the first episode was pretty decent. And, Bruce, you don't have to worry, because by the second episode, they basically just dropped that whole he's learning his powers thing. That's already. Great. So he was full on. And in the second episode, they introduced Timberwolf character.
Mm-hmm.
And I was originally kind of disappointed in the lineup of the Legion cartoon.
What lineup do they have?
Well, the main lineup, it seems right now, is, and again, I don't know what name they're using, but they have, you know, Lightning Lad or Livewire or whatever the hell they're calling him now, Saturn Girl,
mm-hmm.
Phantom Girl, Triplicate Girl, Brainiac 5, and Bouncing Boy.
Bouncing Boy, go
figure. Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting character in the cartoon. He never was a huge, you know, player in the actual comics all that much.
Yeah, yeah.
But interesting choice. And then they just in the second episode they added Timberwolf. Apparently, now I think that the show is going to go like JLU with a rotating roster of other characters,
mm-hmm.
because they've made mention and they've shown pictures on the wall of Cosmic Boy, and who else? A couple other people that I am flaking on. I can't remember.
Karate Kid.
Yeah. Either that or the Invisible Kid. I can't remember which one they showed on the screen. And Colossal Boy. And a few others. I thought it was kind of odd that they don't have Cosmic Boy as part of the main team.
Yeah.
Since those are the core three characters.
Sure, of course, yeah.
But it was. I mean, it's fun. I'm enjoying it a lot more than I thought I would, to say.
Now, Bruce, I know you have a very different opinion on the Teen Titans series. You are a fan of it, from what I know, correct?
Okay. I didn't start out as a fan. I didn't. Okay. I tried watching it several times because I have a friend who's very, very into anime and manga, and he's always urging me to read this or watch this, and I watched it, and I didn't get it. I just didn't get it. You know, like you said, the super deformity and, them shrinking down to children and going, I don't know. I didn't get it. And then the fifth season started, and I heard that the Doom Patrol was going to be in it, and I thought, well, I got to see this. I got to see what they're doing with this. And basically, just I fell in love with it. And then I went back, and my brother loaned me, season one. Went back and watched them, and it's like, oh yeah, I get this now. You know, it's hard to explain. It just, I wasn't accepting it. It's just me. I just wasn't accepting what it was.
So it just took multiple watchings until you actually understood exactly what they were trying to do with the series.
Right. And it was the same thing with the new Batman series too. I watched the first episode. And I said, oh, Jackie Chan Batman, And I didn't bother to watch it until my brother loaned me the movie, Batman vs. Dracula.
Yeah.
And I liked that except for one scene that really bothered me. But other than that, I really liked that. And then he loaned me the series, and I happened to catch the first Batgirl episode. And mm-hmm. I just fell in love. It's like, oh, I like this now,
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up about Batgirl, because that was one of the things that kind of turned me off from the show.
Okay.
And this is my reason is that originally when the show first started, it was young Batman. It was like year one Batman, and it was just solo Batman. And we really have never had a solo Batman cartoon where it's just Batman by himself. And then they introduced Batgirl, and then that was fine, but then all of a sudden she was in every episode.
Mm.
She became his de facto sidekick. And then now in season four, we've gotten Robin introduced into the mix, and now he has two sidekicks walking around every episode. It's a little much, I guess.
And the only reason why Robin was introduced is because Teen Titans ended. And they've made that perfectly clear. They weren't allowed to introduce Robin until now, so they're sort of forcing him into the series, it seems.
That one's actually, that's a pretty good episode if you've been holding out on watching or didn't like the first early seasons.
Mm-hmm.
There's the first episode of season four, I believe, called something like A Matter of Family or something like that.
Okay.
Where he's introduced. It gives Robin his origin. You see him join up basically a way less crappier version of the Batman and Robin All-Star comic.
Oh, that's not too hard. That's not hard to do right there.
Yeah, I know. It's actually pretty decent. I don't catch that much. The thing with Batgirl is also in that show is that, God, as I said, as an anime snob, I hate this anime influence that's put into cartoons, and she's like a total anime character in the middle of the Batman universe.
Well, we talked about this a little bit on the manga episode, last episode, and I want to bring it up now. Obviously, Japanese influence has been getting higher and higher over the years. I mean, is this to catch the kids that are into manga so much these days, that are into anime these days, or is it just they're realizing the production quality of stuff you find in Japan, and they're just trying to influence it onto the American stuff today? I mean, Bruce, I mean, you are not too much of a fan of that anime style, but I mean, can you see why they're going for that these days with the kids?
Oh, sure. Give the kids what they want, If mm-hmm. the kids are into anime and manga, I do the same thing, but it'd be crazy not to, if you're in business. I mean, give people what they want. You want to stay in business.
that's why, like, a lot of people forget that, you know, they're not making these for the 20-year-olds and the 30-year-olds. They're making this for the 13-year-olds, the 14-year-olds who want to go out and read that and watch that. And just like sometimes even the 6 or 7 year olds, they want to get people involved with the world of comics. What better way to do that than give them a fun animated series that they might perhaps relate to a bit more than something that's has like a 10-20 year continuity already in the Timverse, which has been around since the 90s now. And well, it's been at least 16-17 years with that now, correct?
That long? Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, sometime in the 90s, I know, definitely this is when the Batman series debuted. But you know what the thing is with that? I mean, I understand that they want to, you know, they say, hey, anime is popular and manga is popular, so let's make our cartoon look like that. For some reason, that's always offended my delicate artistic sensibilities. It smacks of Herb Trimpe trying to draw like Rob Liefeld.
Oh, no.
That's what that smacks like to me. And I don't know if you were around during the 90s. I don't know if Bruce remembers this or not, but that was like one of the saddest things I ever remember seeing, is this old, like, stalwart Marvel penciler, you know, who'd been around for decades, trying to get work in the 90s, and he totally changed his style to try to draw like Liefeld for
a while.
That's
a shame.
I do remember that, yeah.
And it was just horrendous. And that's what those kind of things remind me of, is because they're just doing it. You know, it's not just the way they naturally draw. It's like a forced attempt to throw in these influences that they think are popular. And I guess it works in some cases. I mean, we have other shows that are really popular. Stuff like, crap, I don't know, what is that show? Like Avatar or something? That's not real animation, but it looks like it's drawn to simulate Japanese animation style, and it's still popular. So.
There was, what was it, Hyperforce Go or something like that? That's not on anymore, I don't think. But that one was actually really good. That had a lot of anime themes in it. Was more of a homage and more of a bone out there to the people who have been following anime for years now, and for cartoons and comics also, because they had a lot of references in that. But I can't remember the actual full name of the series. Definitely Hyperforce Go was in it, though. I can't remember what it actually
yeah,
was.
It's a long name, yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I must have missed that one.
Teenage Monkey something or other.
Oh, is that the one with the monkeys?
Super Robot Monkey Team Hyperforce Go.
Okay.
There
gotcha.
We go. Yeah.
You know, as long as we're talking about the different art styles, and since you brought that up, do you think that it was a... I mean, is it a positive or a negative that DC stuck with a house style for all their cartoons for the last, like, 15 years?
Well, I feel that, I mean, what better way to actually get a sort of a continuity going for the continuity buffs out there, for the older fans, than to have a house style? But at the same time, as I said, people get older. And if you're trying to get a kid to be into something, and, you know, they reference something that happened, say, 5 years ago on a series, then they're not going to want to go back and watch that episode from 5 years ago. The guy watching at home, who's, you know, 20, 22, 23, even, you know, 30 or something like that, might be, oh, yeah, I remember that episode, but, well, it's just not going to work to get those young kids in there. Similarly, if you're going with a style that was popular back in the 90s, that style's not going to age very well. And it's one of the reasons why I felt they switched over with the Gotham Knights style, because eventually, you know, the Batman movie wasn't fresh in everybody's heads anymore. They couldn't go with that style anymore, because that was the Batman from ages ago. You know, to get rid of that, the little yellow behind his bat, and to make him look more like the Dark Knight Returns style was probably a nice touch for them. But everything changes. So that's why I felt they went to the Batman and the Superman, which might be coming out soon. They have to change things eventually.
Like I said, I mean, I don't know as far as if they ever referenced any older shows, story content-wise, but I guess my thinking is that it does, you know... It was distinctive. It did brand everything and make it seem like it was part of the same universe.
Yeah.
That you had a similar style that ran through pretty much all of their series up until Teen Titans, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately for me, I guess if you're kind of, you know, it's one of those things where if you love his art style, you're a happy camper. If you don't particularly like that art style, or you're kind of tired of it, yeah, you're kind of stuck. I'm sort of glad now that we are seeing different artistic takes on the characters. But again, I think that's kind of the problem that we've had with Marvel animated series, is that they're all over the place. I mean, how many series have there been? Every series they've ever had has been in a totally different different style.
Except for the 90s. They tried it in the 90s with some of the lesser-known series like Incredible Hulk and Iron Man and Fantastic Four. Those were all sort of within the same universe. Like, when they would guest star on each other's shows, they still look pretty much exactly the same. But when the Fantastic Four guest starred on Spider-Man, even when X-Men guest starred on Spider-Man, there was such a jarring change in the way they looked that it was hard to get used to.
And I think we could deal with it. And I don't know why I should say it's confusing, because, you know, every comic book has a different artist, basically. Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe it's, again, that's that sense of, you know, the cohesive universe or something along that lines. I don't know. But speaking of, I don't know if you want to go down this route or not, because one of my other favorite animated series from the last 10 years is also probably one of the most reviled many people. And this would be the MTV Mainframe Spider-Man series.
I love that series. I would 100% agree with that statement there. I mean, it was new, it was fresh, it was innovative, it was creative, and it was something that we haven't seen out of Marvel in ages. I mean, for me, and it captured both the comic book style and the movie style so well that I loved it. I absolutely adored it. So, I mean, Bruce, were you a fan of the animated series on MTV? And also, to go back on that, are you more for a in-house style or more for something that changes regularly?
Well, I think in animation, you know, there are certain things that have to be. The design of the characters has to be very simple. Mm-hmm. Because the more complex the design is, the less animation there's going to be. Like the old Marvel superheroes cartoons from the 1960s. all they did in those was they basically cut and pasted Jack Kirby, and in the next frame they cut and pasted Steve Ditko. You know, I mean, they were hard. They weren't animated at all, but boy, they were fancy. You know, the still drawings. I think Bruce Timm was able to, and I'm assuming he did the character designs, but I think he was able to streamline the characters so that they were still easily animated but looked good. And I think design's very important in something like that. I think the Teen Titans, I mean, I think they were well designed as well. The new Batman, and I'm not fond of the Legion of Superheroes designs. Everybody looks like they have Popeye forearms, you know, and that kind of bothers me. I mean, it works for Popeye fine, but, you know. Okay, and Alley-Oop, too, but besides that, you know, that bothered me. But I think it's a good idea to design, you know, to have a nice design. I like the idea that they all look like they came from the same universe. And I totally agree that Marvel just, they need one good person to design their characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, I mean, you would see somebody come into the series and it was a totally different design and it didn't work, you know.
Yeah.
It just didn't work for me. The only thing that bothered me about the Spider-Man series on MTV was that they didn't incorporate the 3D modeling very well. Mm-hmm. It was 2D animation and 3D modeled animation, and the two don't mix very well.
Yeah.
You know, if you go back and you look at Futurama, for instance, Futurama uses a lot of 3D modeled designs, but they're 3D modeled designs to look like 2D.
And right, it's pretty seamless in there.
Extraordinarily well. Oh my gosh, you know. Go back and look at like a Disney film where, let's say The Rescuers, where they had, you know, like a car coming. Or 101 Dalmatians, you know, where Cruella de Vil drove that car. That must have been painstaking, and it really doesn't look that good.
Yeah.
But now that they have the 3D modeled, I mean, like I said, Futurama, perfect example. You know,
Of course, yeah.
It looks wonderful, you know.
Without a doubt. And, I mean, you can even go back to the Spider-Man animated series from the 90s that used the 3D models for the city. And while those were very elementary, you know, compared to some of the stuff you see today, that was really the first one that really tried to incorporate, you know, the 3D modeling effect. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. With the Spider-Man animated series, with the cell shading, that's what cell shading does. You know, sometimes it looks great, sometimes it just really feels out of place. And to go 2D with 3D like that, there's no third dimension to the characters, to go with the third dimension of the backgrounds, and I would have liked to see more of that. So if you're going to go CGI with Spider-Man, I'd like to actually see more of a straight CGI than a cell shading, because cell shading really, I mean, it was a good series, don't get me wrong, I loved the series, but I would have liked to see the animation be a bit crisper. I mean, was it the animation problem for you,
Matt? That's kind of the problem with using so much CGI stuff, just mm-hmm. simply because I don't think that we're even at a point right now, unless you're spending millions of dollars, we just can't get that fluidity of line that you get with, you know, traditional hand-drawn stuff, especially with a character like Spider-Man, because that's all he is. I mean, he's all about fluidity. He's all about jumping around, you know, bending in these crazy angles and poses and everything.
Yeah.
And that was one of the knocks that I did get from a lot of people back at the time, that it just looked really stiff. I thought it was pretty good as far as, you know, cartoon or computer animation went, but... You know, I would have liked to see. Unfortunately, we only got, 12, 13 episodes.
We did, yeah. Show, so. They had said that there was going to be a season 2 that was possibly going to go straight to DVD, but they eventually tossed that idea entirely, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in fact, actually, now there's going to be a new Spider-Man animated series from what they're saying. They're not saying what it's going to be, but they're also saying it's going to be a straight to DVD series for the first time ever. And I don't know whether or not it's going to be CGI or whether or not it's going to be straight animation. I myself would rather it be straight animation and, you know, just maybe have a couple of those CGI elements and just maybe do it right like Futurama did. But, I mean, for the future, would you rather see a CGI Spider-Man or would you rather see a cartoon Spider-Man? I mean, Bruce, you had problems with the CGI in the first place, so obviously the choice would be animation for you, right?
I don't have a problem. You know, I don't have a problem with good CGI. And, you know, quite frankly, it could... Once they've designed the characters, it works like a model. As if you had a model, you can make them do anything you want, and you can save a lot of money once that initial design is done. So
but the initial design has to be good. That's the problem.
Well, exactly. Yeah. It's just when you got 2D and 3D clashing like that. That bothers me. I don't mind 3D, though. I mean, I'm just trying to think. Oh, God. I mean, Reboot.
Mm-hmm.
That was incredible.
Yeah.
That was an incredible series. And that was all, you know, 3D generated.
That Spider-Man cartoon was done by the same studio that did that.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Mainframe. Mainframe Entertainment. Which, actually, they're not really doing anything anymore. Which is a shame, because they've sort of switched their focus, and they're not really doing too much of the animated series anymore. I mean, they did Beast Wars as well, and Beast Machines, and both of which were just outstanding, but they just really, they feel that they would actually make more money doing more of the, Barbie and G.I. Joe stuff they do than doing an actual animated series, so...
Well, yeah, direct-to-video, you mentioned that in the intro, that direct-to-video seems to be an experiment that's proceeding apace, especially at Marvel. We've so far seen the first two releases of the Ultimates, or Ultimate Avengers, or however they're labeling it, DVDs. Now, unfortunately, I have not had the privilege to watch either of those.
I've seen them both.
Okay, what do you think about those?
I think the first one had potential. I think the second one reached that potential. Because, well, first of all, what Bruce was talking about previously, about, you know, the designs need to be simple, they need to be clean. Well, they've got Brian Hitch creating these characters. And, you know, they're going from Brian Hitch's designs. You can't get better than that, really. And, I mean, these guys... I've been reading the Ultimate Comics for ages now, and you know, at the snail's pace that they come out.
Feels like,
you know,
ages,
that's,
yeah.
Exactly.
It started in 1974.
It's ages, but it's 24 issues, so there you go. You know, ever since, you know, 1963 when they came out with issue 1, it's been terrific. But they did a good job on the character designs. The voices, they're hit or miss for me. I don't like the fact that, as opposed to going for some of the big names, they went for big name impersonators. And I'll give you a smooth example here of one of those, as I actually look up the voice cast for that so I can actually remember who the hell it was. But the guy who voices... Oh, Fillmore. There you go. Fillmore does John Stewart on the Justice League Unlimited series. They got a guy who sounds exactly like Fillmore, only less interesting. And the entire time I was watching the first movie, I'm like... Wow, Phil Lamar sounds a bit off. And then I realized it wasn't Phil Lamar. It was just some guy that got to sound like Phil Lamar. So they went cheap on the voices. They got guys who sounded like guys we know, but weren't the guys we know. Also, one of the character design for Bruce Banner is Joe Pantoliano. There's no...
Character design.
It looks just like Joey Pants.
Oh, that's not right.
Yeah, it's like a combination of Joe Pantoliano and the other guy. I can't think of his name all of a sudden. From Ghost World...
Steve Buscemi?
Yeah, Steve Buscemi. There you go. Yeah, it's like a cross between the two, pretty much.
And that's wrong.
Then again, you know, Brian Hitch created Samuel L. Fury, and Samuel L. Fury is definitely in this. But, you know, I liked the first movie. The second movie had more of a plot to me. They seemed like they were getting, they were going back and forth a bit easier. The actors seemed to have better chemistry. But the movie definitely, it's getting there. Let's put it that way. Hopefully the third one will be even better. But the second one was definitely better than the first. But they're having problems mixing the CGI and the animation, which is just like we talked about before.
Well, to go back to what Bruce said, I find it kind of baffling that all of the Fox animated shows have been using CGI mixed with traditional, 2D animation for years. I mean, even the Family Guy is using that now. Futurama was, again, that was the pinnacle of seamless blending of the two together. Yeah. But, even the Simpsons use it, the Family Guy use it, all those shows already are using that process. I'm not sure why at this point it's such a complicated procedure for them. I know that this is a new startup thing from Marvel, so I don't know if they're going with a new studio or where they're coming up with this stuff from.
Here's another question.
Let me give you another question, since we're talking about the Ultimates, and you mentioned the possible Spider-Man DVD release. Now, again, why are all of Marvel's video games and all of their animation projects focusing on the Ultimates universe?
Because that seems to be fresh in the mind of the kiddies these days. I mean, more people are going for that over the regular universe. I mean, the older crowd will go for the regular universe. The Ultimate crowd is, obviously, as we talked about previously, it sells better in borders. It has more of a fresh feel, I guess you'd say. So they're going to get more of the teen crowd than the older crowd right away with the Ultimates. And
we can get it. Yeah. I want to bring that up again because I don't necessarily think that's true. I don't see why, the average Joe on the street who's never seen Spider-Man or never read a comic book other than, seen a movie or a TV show, they don't know the Ultimates guy any better than the iconic Kirby guy. To me, it makes no sense. I don't know.
Also had more of a cinematic feel, which actually transfers over to the animated a bit better than I'd say a regular old Avengers movie would, because
it wouldn't make any difference, though. That's my point, I guess. It doesn't. There's really no distinction except just to have those different costumes on the characters, because there's no reason that couldn't just be a guy in the classic Captain America costume. Why does he have to have the Ultimates costume? And why does Thor have to have his sort of knot costume and weird hammer look that he has from the Ultimates?
It's a good question. Bruce, I mean, were you a fan of the Ultimate Avengers? I mean, you've seen both of them so far. What's your take?
Ultimate Avengers, the first one, I thought was better written. Mm-hmm. I like the story. The second one, it wasn't even the second one was poorly written. There was just some things that bothered me about it, especially the Black Panther character. Where did he suddenly get these metal gloves that shoot fingertips and stuff? I mean, where did this come from? This is garbage.
Vibranium can do anything, man.
But I try to accept things as they are. The Ultimate Avengers was sort of a melding between the Ultimates and the Avengers, which I think was a wise move because the Ultimates might be a little bit much too mature for kids, but the new Avengers has too much baggage. The Avengers has too much baggage as a story. What bothered me about the first one was the animation. It just wasn't consistent at all. It was almost as if they had farmed out scenes to different studios or people that worked for different studios. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times I saw Hank Hill in that. I swear to God, you watch that first Ultimates, and it says to me that, okay, hey, these guys were, off for the summer from doing, King of the Hill, so, now they're animating for us, and it's just... I didn't see that as much. I don't know if that I saw it at all in the second one. It was more consistent.
Okay. All right. So, in other words, you're more story, better story in the first one, better animation in the second one.
Yes.
Yeah. But there shouldn't be a trade-off. There should be both of both. If they keep doing good animation and good storylines, then they can have a franchise here for years. Mm-hmm. But obviously, if if you keep putting a subpar product out there, whether it is in the animation or whether it's in the story, people just are not going to buy it.
Well, that's, I want to bring that up too, because, you know, Bruce, you mentioned that the fact that this was a melding kind of the two different versions of the Avengers. I mean, didn't that ultimately just piss off two groups of people? Because I remember on the CGS forum, you know, everyone was complaining and moaning about, oh, this is watered down, this isn't the Ultimates, you know, this sucks. And that was a lot of knocks that people had against it. Now, I mean, was it worth it to do that, to appeal to a mainstream audience, or should they have gone just for the, like, PG-13, R-rated fanboy kind of demographic?
Good question. I like the new updated Ultimates universe. I'm not a big fan of Ultimate Spider-Man or Ultimate X-Men, only because I think that they're kind of written down to a younger age, whereas the Ultimates and pretty much Ultimate Fantastic Four seem to be aimed at an older than normal age. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think your standard comic book mainstream superhero comic book is aimed at, oh, I don't know, 14, 15-year-olds, you know?
Yeah.
And we've all got 14 or 15-year-olds in us. I'm 51, and I still have that, you know? Maybe not quite as much, but, you know, where I think the Ultimate Spider-Man and Ultimate X-Men is aimed at maybe 12 and 13-year-olds, you know? Just my opinion. And I think the Ultimates is aimed at, you know, the next step, you know, when a slightly more mature audience. So you can't take that and translate it into a cartoon that you're hoping kids are going to be watching, you know?
Sure.
That you know, if my kids weren't 18 and up, you know, that maybe I'd be sitting down with my kids and saying, you know, trying to introduce them to cartoons, you know? So you've got to meld the two. I kind of agree with Matt. I'm not sure that Matt said that, but
sure, I did.
What you were saying, the other people said on the message board. I kind of agree that it was kind of silly to take this and this and mix them together. You've already got two versions of the Avengers. Now we created a third one. You know.
Yeah, that's one of. I mean, again, one of my problems with Marvel with this is that they just. I don't really know what they're doing. I don't know who they're aiming it at, what they're trying to accomplish. You know, they take the Ultimates, which is a very distinctive, different take. Like you said, it's aimed at an older audience, and then take that and then turn it down, you know, to a PG-13, a 13-year-old, whatever, PG-rated cartoon, which kind of upset the Ultimate fans in the first place. And the average person, they don't know the Ultimates from Adam, so it doesn't really... You know, it just seems a little weird to me that would be the focus of their works, especially since they have these, you know, classic properties that everyone is familiar with. Even if you don't know them or you have never read them before, you know, they're iconic characters. So that's kind of bothered me in, like I said, a lot of all their video games that Marvel has come out with in the last few years have all featured the Ultimate characters. It just seems kind of weird.
Well, I do have to say, though, that Ultimate Spider-Man game, I'm actually three-quarters of the way through it now. I finally picked it up because it went down in price, and it's damn good. It is really, really good. I'd like to see that quality game come out, and even that quality animation come out of Marvel with the regular characters.
Well, I've heard a lot of good things about the Marvel Ultimate Alliance game that just came out.
As have I.
But again, I mean, Ultimate Alliance, it's, you know, you can change the costumes with enough different actions and
yeah.
Get the classic costumes and things.
Yeah, you can get the gold armor Spidey as one of the Ultimates,
yeah, yeah,
you know, because we all want to play as gold armor Spidey.
Unfortunately, yes, that's true from what I've heard. I don't know. Trying to think of what else I wanted to say about this.
Well, would you have rather seen something, I'd say, more along the lines of maybe the Spawn animated series that was obviously, it was on HBO, it was obviously driven towards the adult crowds that would be watching this, as opposed to trying to dumb it down a bit for the kids? I mean, the Ultimates is an adult property. We've made that clear here, that it's the most mature out of the Ultimate bunch. So would you have rather seen something that was geared towards, say, the HBO crowd as opposed to the kiddie crowd with the Ultimates? Because you probably would have gotten a better movie out of it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's one of the freedoms that you have with this direct-to-DVD release. You don't have to worry about censors and people telling you what you can or can't do. unfortunately, I mean, just like the perception that we have of mainstream comics is that, you know, animation right now, most animated series still live or die based on merchandising, based on toys, based on, you know, all those other little things, bed sheets and underoos that they can sell. And that's one of the reasons that I had heard why the JLU cartoon just didn't continue is because it wasn't a huge toy seller. You know, it wasn't generating enough money. It was costing too much to make the show, and they weren't making it back with the merchandising. So, I mean, I can understand that decision. I'm not real happy with that, though, especially since we've seen some really good, more adult-aimed animated things in the last few months. I want to also, you know, this is kind of going off on a sidetrack, but one of the best animated, most closely animated programs that I've seen in a while was the Mike Mignola's amazing Screw-On Head.
I was just going to mention that
episode.
Yeah.
I don't know, Bruce, did you catch that?
I started watching it on screen. I think it was. Is it in Flash animation or was it actual animation?
It was. I don't know how it was done. I mean, they posted it on the Sci-Fi website.
It was Flash animated. It was Flash animated, but it was actually posted on the Sci-Fi website about 2 weeks before it was going to air, so they could give people an idea of what it was going to look like. And that's actually where I watched it the first time, and it was actually a really great quality for the web.
Now, what I liked about the show is, like I said, is that it was. Sort of like Sin City, the movie. I mean, that was, that was Mignola right there. That was his art style. That was his stuff. If you liked him, you saw it. You got what you expected. And then we just got this Hellboy movie a couple weeks ago, which was in a totally unrecognizable style, which really kind of made me cry after seeing both of those side by side. I would kill for a Hellboy film in that style of the Amazing Screw-On Head.
You see that? You make Matt cry when you do things like that. Do you really want to see him cry? Jeez, Bruce, what did you think from the few minutes of the Amazing Screw-On Head that you saw?
Well, I mean, like Matt said, it's all Mignola. I mean, there's Mignola, whatever.
Let's just say Mignola. What the hell?
Mignola. I mean, it's him, and it's beautiful. And what I like about it is it's something that I've never seen before. You know, if somebody you mentioned. Sin City. My biggest complaint about that is why did they bother? If you're gonna make a film look exactly like the book, the book I bought years ago, I don't see the point, you know. But anyway, getting back to this, I would be afraid that if they were using Mignola for Hellboy, that they, you know, do it frame by frame. But I don't think they'd do that. I really don't. And I think Mike Mignola could probably design character sheets that people could animate. You know? I think he's good enough to do that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, his style certainly lends to that.
I think he's got
a very clean style, yeah. So. That would animate very well.
Yeah, I haven't seen the Hellboy yet, so I don't know. I've been trying to find it, but it's eluding me.
Well, I have. I got to be honest. I haven't watched it all the way through. I can't comment on the story. I did record it, and I watched the art style, and that's kind of why I didn't go through with watching it all the way. It's just in a very sort of traditional kind of regular generic animation style, and I know that it's rare to see an exact replication of an artist's style in animation. That almost never happens. So the fact that they actually did that with the Screw-On Head was sort of amazing in and of itself. I sort of like to see that more, if that's even possible to do. You know, again, I don't know how difficult that is to animate in some of these more, you know, intricate styles that we have nowadays.
Well, it would take 12 years to animate a Brian Hitch-style Ultimates movie because you'd have to put so much detail into the background that it would be like a Disney production. They'd have to start at about 5 or 6 years before they want to put it out to actually get the product out there. So.
Well, I mean, maybe they should actually consider coming out with a full-fledged Finding Nemo-budgeted superhero movie done that way. You know, obviously we had The Incredibles, but they're not an existing property. I would be interested in seeing what that would look like if they actually spent the money.
Yeah, well, with that recent Fantastic Four animated that came out of Gay Paris, French, and France, as it were, people hated it. That was the genuine consensus that I saw. And honestly, I like the animation style. I did like the animation style, but the character designs were just... Okay, I never want to see a four painted on the thing's chest. It's just not the way to do the thing. I mean, that's not the Ultimate Universe. That's not the regular universe. That's just creating your own thing. And what we're sort of leaning towards here, I think, is that if you're going to go with a character design of somebody, of some particular artist, do that, but then make different stories out of it. That would probably be a good way to go. Don't mimic an exact story that's been done already. Create something new with a decent character design.
I've only seen one episode of that Fantastic Four cartoon, and... Yeah. You know, Fantastic Four, it's always been a property that's just never been that successful in these animation projects. They've tried to do it, four times so far? They've tried to launch this as a cartoon.
I believe so,
It just hasn't caught on, and definitely, you know, with the success of the movie, I guess they wanted to give this a shot. And that, again, that's what you said to me, as someone that's a fan, that is probably the most annoying aspect of it, is just simply the character designs are just ridiculous.
But, and also, there was no Johnny Storm rap in this one, so that one just automatically
turned me off
to it.
I'm glad I missed that. I mean, the one I saw was actually, it seemed kind of a throwback in some ways to the, you know, Stan and Jack days, because they have, you know, they're in the Baxter building, and they have, like, tenants that live underneath their lab and their floors and stuff.
Which actually takes me back to the first season of the Fantastic Four animated from the 90s, which basically did the exact same thing.
So, I mean, that's kind of a more of a retro sort of idea for the team. You know, like the purple spray paint four on the chest is definitely gotta go. I don't know what they were thinking with that. They have to brand him, you know, in case you might be confused who the big orange rock guy was.
It was the know. It. It was the when. I don't know. But, Bruce, did you get a chance to watch any of the Fantastic Four animated while it was still on?
Yeah, I tried. It's... the character designs are kind of weak. The animations, I guess, you know, it's mediocre, but the story was just driving me crazy. You know, I mean, who, you know, are these like 50-year-old guys that are trying to talk hip? Or, I mean, it just, you know, that Johnny Storm was annoying, you know? You know, I don't try to talk hip, you know, because I know better, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yo.
Yeah. Well, it was a pretty strange episode. I mean, the one I saw had something to do with, like, these bugs that came out of the negative zone, supposedly, and they were eating the energy in the building. It was
okay.
Quite a non-plot. I don't know. It was not really exciting, not all that epically interesting.
Well, hey, call me crazy, but I was a huge fan of the Iron Man and Fantastic Four series that came out in the 90s, the second season.
Yeah,
the first
you're
seasons
crazy.
were iffy. But the second season, when they changed animation houses and actually had a cleaner, crisper look to it, I really, really enjoyed that. And I would actually like to see something more like that now, but obviously that's not going to happen because it was well animated the second season, and the plots and stuff were pretty damn good, and you saw a fractured Iron Man in there also. They're making a new Iron Man series that apparently isn't even going to follow the Ultimate Iron Man miniseries that came out. They're just making an entirely new story for him to fit this Ultimate Avengers version. So, I don't know. He's definitely not going to be a drunk, because you can't do that for, you know, 12-year-olds. So who knows what we're going to see out of that.
Yeah, you know, this is sort of semi-related. It just got me thinking when you were mentioning these older 90s cartoons. But what do you think about the fact that a lot of times we're limited by all these complicated licensing deals that are taking place, that we a lot of times end up with characters that are just B-list or, you know, crap characters?
Herbie.
Being involved in...
Exactly.
In the shows, and I mean, my example that I'm thinking of specifically was the, you know, aborted Avengers cartoon that came out in the 90s that had, like, the powerhouse lineup of, like, Wasp and, you know, Hydra, and, like,
yeah.
I don't even know who the heck was in there. It was a bunch of just really, you know, B-lister characters, and, you know, for a while, we always had that kind of prop up, where it's like, oh, well, you know, the Hulk... you know, the Hulk can't be in this because he's licensed by some other company, and you know, Batman and Superman and, you know, Robin can't be in this, and Wonder Woman can't be in this episode, that kind of stuff.
I like to call that Avengers series the Mighty Morphin Power Avengers, because that armor they use was just so utterly ridiculous. It was not even close to anywhere near entertaining the entire way through. And you saw the pictures of Captain America, Thor, Iron Man, and the rest up on the wall, which were actually just taken straight from covers from Marvel Comics that were coming out at the time. And you never saw them inside the actual thing. They're like, wow, if only Captain America was here. But he's not.
Classic.
Yeah. I mean, Bruce, what's your take on the whole licensing situation?
I don't even remember the 90s.
Really? Wow.
He's partying too hard.
Actually, I was working too hard, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But full-time job, 12 hours a day, plus a part-time job, you know.
Yeah. You know what they say, if you can remember the 90s, you know, you weren't there.
Licensing. Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned Herbie, because most people, myself included, I was under the impression that Herbie was in that old Fantastic Four series because they didn't want kids to set themselves on fire. But then somebody along the line said, no, that's an urban legend. The reason the Human Torch wasn't in the series is because it was licensed to somebody else.
You got it.
And they needed a fourth character, which kind of blew my mind, you know, because it's like all these years, you know, I thought one thing.
Yeah, I remember that. That was what we said. I mean, I remember that back in the early days, you know.
I would have rather it been Lumpkin the Mailman be the
fourth. Well, it could have been anybody. I mean, think of all the comics they had to pull from. They could have had freaking Crystal or something in there, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
Herbie the
Robot. Herbie now is finally in a good place. He's Franklin Richards' little sidekick in the Franklin Richards comics, but those aren't taken seriously, and that's why the animated series couldn't be taken seriously.
Yeah.
But let me just outsure you here, Matt, as well, obviously we're getting close to office time for you.
All right.
So let me ask you one quick thing here, which actually I'll be asking Bruce later on in the episode. Where do you see the market of comic book animations in about 10 years? I mean, do you see it coming out on TV, internet, DVD, a little bit of both? I mean, what do you think?
Well, I mean, based on the way things are going right now, I mean, there's still a market for Saturday morning cartoons. There's, you know, the success of all cartoon channels on cable, like Cartoon Network, seems to me, you know, they're always going to need new product. Superheroes, comic books, and animation just go hand in hand. You know, it's a ready-made property. I don't see any reason why it would not continue to be on television. I do think that we're going to see maybe more of these direct-to-DVD releases if they are more successful. You know, these Ultimate Avengers ones seem like they're kind of the test case. I remember reading some news a few months back about how DC was planning to enter the direct-to-video market too, with a actual Perez-styled Teen Titans film,
yep,
which made me, again, cry with joy.
Oh,
so
absolutely.
That will make me happy. You know, it's always going to come down to this. If they want to aim at the older audience, if they want to be taken seriously, if they want to make a more mature film, it's going to have to be on either DVD or, you know, like you said, Cartoon Network, Adult Swim. They've created a market for adult-oriented programs. So, you know, perhaps we'll see some there. I don't know.
I don't know either, man. We'll just have to wait and see. Hopefully they'll continue to put out good products, though, and I like that idea of the whole DC thing, which we'll get into later on the episode. But, you know, definitely some good points from you, Matt, and little information here. What's coming up on That's What She Said?
Well, yeah, if you are a fan of NBC's The Office, make sure you check out my other podcast, That's What She Said, at thatswhatshesaid.libsyn.com. Well, tonight is Branch Closing is the name of the episode, where we're going to find out what happens, because supposedly the Scranton branch is going to be closed, and what will Michael do to save the office? Tune in to find out, and check out episode 7 of That's What She Said for detailed analysis.
You know what I think he's going to do? Arson.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, this is only the 7th episode of 20-something, so pretty good chance they're not going to close the office.
Golly gee whiz, I wonder.
I hate to spoiler that for you, but...
But yeah, thanks for hopping on for a little bit, Matt, and we'll talk to you next week, buddy.
All right, you guys take care.
All right, take it easy.
Yep, bye.
All right, there we go. That was Matt getting himself out, but we still got more to go here with you, Bruce. So just you and me for a little bit here, buddy. Think you can take it?
I can take it.
Hell yeah. All right, so he mentioned the DC stuff when he first got out of there, and it's something that I wanted to talk about definitely, as they seem to be going more for the idea that we talked about earlier about going with source material, specific source material, and bringing that into the animated form almost exactly from the looks of things, because they're going to put the Judas contract out there, and they're going to put DC Darwin Cook's New Frontier, and I believe the other one was, well, I'm actually confused on this. Do you know whether or not it's Dan Jurgens' mini-series about Superman Doomsday, or is it actual Death of Superman that they're going to be making as the third one?
You know, I heard it, but that's really all I know about it. You know more than I do, because I hadn't even thought about it, to tell you the truth.
Okay, but...
Which one it could possibly be.
Yeah, because I'm not quite sure about that myself, but I am sort of glad to see that they're doing this, as this is stuff that's going to transfer beautifully over to animation. Mm-hmm. But what you said about Sin City, is there really a reason to have the exact same product out there, only in moving picture form?
Well, I wonder if maybe I wouldn't mind it so much in animated form. I don't know, everybody I talk to loves Sin City, and, oh, this is such, wonderful... But to me, I was watching the book, and, I don't get it. Maybe if it was animated, I would have loved it. I don't know.
Well, let's see. Let's see. Somebody go out there and animate Sin City and see whether or not Bruce likes it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if they animated it and they made it look just like Frank Miller, I might be impressed.
Yeah. Well, that's like, hey, I mean, honestly, if they put George Perez art out there on the screen for me to watch, I will be drooling, I will have my popcorn and my soda, and I will sit down and I will watch that at least four times, because it sounds like it's going to be a beautiful thing, but we just have to see how well they're going to be able to transfer it. I mean, these are series that will be able to transfer well. Question is, how good are they going to do it?
Could you imagine, though? It boggles the mind. I mean, it sends chills up and down my spine thinking about, how nice that could look.
Yeah.
Even if they took George Perez's characters and dumbed them down a little bit for mm-hmm. animation, I'm pretty sure Doug Wildey has passed away already, but, to get somebody as talented as Doug Wildey to come in and do the model sheets...
Oh, my God. Yeah. And apparently Wolfman is going to be the advisor on the series, just like Darwin Cook is the advisor on the New Frontier series. And I'm almost positive they're bringing Jurgens on as the advisor for that. So it's not like they're just doing these without any of the creators involved with the project. Mm-hmm. They're going out there, they're getting information from them, they're getting, their ideas of how they'd like to see it, and then hopefully transferring it on there. Right. So, I mean, if the creators are in on it, it has to be good.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it is, at least, because if it's not, I'm going to be severely disappointed here. And so will many of DC fans out there. Should Marvel be doing the same thing here? Because they've got plenty of great stories out there to go with, and plenty of great artists that they can probably turn to.
I'm sorry, but Marvel animation sucks. It really does. I mean, their character design is just blah.
Yeah.
And the animation is poor. Mm-hmm. I mean, they need to get some talented people. They need to hire away some of those people from Bruce Timm. Hey, get Darwin Cook.
Yeah, hell, why not?
He used to work for Bruce Timm.
Uh huh. He helped them out a lot on some of that, and also get some good writers in there. Get somebody like maybe Evan Dorkin to write a couple things just for a name drop there. Listen to the Evan Dorkin episode of Comic Tommy. But I mean. Definitely get some decent creators involved with the project and you might get something good out there. But I still think to this day, the only animated series they did right was the X-Men animated series, not Evolution, even though Evolution had its moments, but the 90s animated series was close enough to the comics that were coming out then to make me happy. Their Phoenix Saga was amazing. Absolutely outstanding. Sure, Jean didn't die at the end in the animated series, but guess what? She wasn't going to die at the end in the original concept.
Yeah, right.
So it's not much of a change there, but I felt that was the best one they put out, and they really haven't done anything that good since.
Now, refresh my memory. Which one was the one with the Australian Wolverine?
That was Pride of the X-Men, which was, and that was the one with the Spider-Man and his amazing friends also. So that, this one actually had, if you've ever listened to the voice track on any of the Versus games that came out, Marvel versus Capcom, you know, Street Fighter versus X-Men, that sort of stuff, it's the same voice actor for Wolverine that they did on that. So it was a guy who actually pretty much characterized Wolverine for an entire generation. The Cyclops they had for that was also the one they used in the video games. The Storm they used in that was the same one they used in the video games. The Gambit was the same one, and so was the Rogue. So these characters' voices were everywhere at that time.
Mm-hmm. And you liked the character design as well?
I did. Well, they were the 90s. They were the 90s costumes. Mm-hmm. So of course I had my moments where, you know, seeing Cyclops with all those belts is just ridiculous to this day. But you know, when I was a kid watching it at home, it was fantastic. I have all of the episodes on VCD that I got off the internet ages ago, and I can still watch that today. The story really holds up, and it's not something I can say about a lot of the animation that came out back then. And even farther than that, because you were around, obviously, in the old days of the Spider-Man does whatever a spider can, yeah, and stuff like that. And that definitely doesn't hold up today when you watch it.
No. I mean, I'm amazed at the fact that they were able to more or less stick to the original stories. Mm-hmm. At least some of the... There's some seasons that... I don't know if it was the first season that was by another studio, and it was... or the later seasons that they deviated from the stories. But when they were sticking with the original stories, you know, I enjoyed them. I mean, they weren't great animation by any means. Mm-hmm. I've tried watching them. Luckily, my nephews every once in a while bug me to put on, you know, Spider-Man. I have the DVD set. So I'll put them on for them, and I'll watch them, and I'll go, ooh, that's really bad. You know? But like you just said, it's something that I grew up with, and for some reason, the things that you grow up with are the things that you give them a little bit of slack. You know, you say, you know what, I grew up with it, I loved it then, and you know what, I still love it. I know it's not as good as I thought it was, but I still love it. Doesn't matter, you know?
Well, that's something also. I mean, were we just expecting less back then than we are now? Because obviously, you know, the subpar animation held us when we were kids. Mm-hmm. And I mean, sure, obviously I'm a couple generations behind you, but I look at some animations that I loved, you know, when I was a kid, and I can't stand it. I can't watch it for more than about 5 seconds at a time. The only ones that really hold up for me, other than the one that I just mentioned, X-Men Animated Series, are The Tick, which is still amazing today, because my girlfriend actually just picked up the season one box set that came out. Ah. And we sat down and basically we marathoned it. And it works so beautifully. It was so snarky and so insane that it really works well. And other than that, there really isn't much, except for maybe the Spawn animated. That was good. That was really, really good. But I only saw bits and pieces of it because I was too young back then to actually watch it. The Spider-Man animated series had its moments. I'll give it that. Their Clone Saga, 12 times better than the Clone Saga that they actually did in the comics, which I'll admit to this day. Wow. But yeah, if you ever get a chance to watch it, it's the last thing they did on the animated series, pretty much the finale, which ends with a conversation between Spider-Man and Stan Lee, because they send him through a dimensional vortex, and he gets to meet Stan Lee, and he has this conversation with him saying that, you know, he should go out there and find, you know, everything that he's looking for in life and just continue on no matter what goes with you. And it was a really touching moment. Mm-hmm. So it definitely had its pluses there, but the animation really doesn't hold up today, and a lot of the other stories that I picked up didn't really hold up today. Are kids today looking for more than what we looked for when we were kids? Is that the problem? I mean, what's going on here?
Well, I mean, let's face it. I mean, kids today grew up on video games, you know. I bought my first computer in 1986, and I was already, you know, what was I? I was 30 years old? Mm-hmm. Yeah, almost. Well, no, 31. I was 31 years old. So, you know, we had these little block characters, and we liked it. You know,
yes.
but now I see these commercials for these video games, and it's like, damn, that's really nice. You know, I think it is the Marvel that I just saw the commercial for it, and I was floored.
Oh, please, yeah, with them breaking out of the bins, really great. Yeah, even the Justice League Heroes, even though I heard it's not that good a game, the animation on that is terrific. I don't know. I guess maybe that is a part of it, that video games just skewed us to that, because obviously, you know, when I was a kid, I had Nintendo. So anything that looked better than the little sprites I had going across the screen, yeah, I was good with. So yeah, if it was animated, I'd watch it. Yeah. Today, it's just not the case anymore.
So I think kids have an expectation, you know, and kids, I don't care what generation you're from, you like your animation to move, you like action.
Yeah.
So if it's a bunch of talking heads, you know, it's not going to work, you know. So you've got to pull it, you've either got to have really good animation with a lot of action, or you've got to pull a John Crick Falusi, where it's really not very good animation at all, but mm-hmm. man, those, the, you know, the shots of the close-ups of the bulging bloodshot eyes or whatever,
yeah,
you know, they knew how to throw those still shots in there and get those posed scenes and all to make it a lot of fun. I can bet you if I showed, my nephews, you know, they're, what, 3 and 5, if yeah, I showed them some Ren and Stimpy cartoons, they'd laugh their butts off, you know.
Of course, yeah, but ignore the Spike TV one, because those were terrible, but also the Superman from, obviously, the classic Superman from mm-hmm. from the old days, that still holds up today because of the animation and all that. It's just, I could watch those anytime, yeah, any day.
And I mean, and you know the story of those and the budget.
Yeah, there was none.
Well, no, actually, Paramount came to Fleischer. Paramount didn't own, well, Paramount distributed Fleischer, mm-hmm. and I'd have to check for the exact facts, but more or less what happened is Paramount came and said, look, we picked up the rights for Superman, we'd like you to animate Superman.
Yeah.
Now, at that point in time, they were turning out cartoons for, let's say, $125,000 a piece.
Okay.
So they said to Paramount, they didn't want to do it, so they doubled their price of their typical cartoon and said, all right, well, we'll do it for $250,000. And Paramount said, great, wonderful. But the problem was, is they couldn't turn out those cartoons for $250,000. So they were losing money until the day that the Fleischers came into the studio and somebody said, you don't work here anymore. And they said,
oh boy.
No, we own the studio. And they said, not anymore, you don't.
Oh, no. and that's how the story went.
Damn. No, I mean, especially that first one, the Mechanical Monsters.
Oh, of course, yeah.
What an incredible piece of animation. It's a little cartoonier than you would like it to be. Not so much Superman and Lois Lane, but like the mad scientist and his, what did he have, a parrot or a raven? I think it was a raven was his sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
That was a little cartoonier than I would have liked. But all in all, I mean, there's one scene on there that every time I watch it is just such a beautiful scene. Superman's, he's trying to grab hold of one of the bullet cars. And he's sliding off, and he finally slides off. And these are in the days when he couldn't fly.
Yeah.
He falls down, and he lands on a building. He instantly squats down, puts his foot on the side of the building, and he kicks off. And
oh my God.
You can feel it. I mean, you can feel the energy in that kick, you know, when he kicks back up to get the bullet vehicle. And it, being a big fan of animation, I mean, I actually, at one point in my life, was ready to go to California to try to get a job in animation.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, I'm really not that great in artists. In those days, it probably didn't matter, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just love animation as an art, and I see things like that, and you know, when somebody really carries off a character or, you know, makes them live for me, it just sends a chill up my spine, you know.
Well, you also make a good point. It's all about the small details, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, you could have something that's animated like stick figures the entire time, but if you have one scene that captivates you, mm-hmm. then you're in. That's it. You know, it doesn't matter what anything else is doing. These days, with a lot of the cartoons, they go more for the flashiness as opposed to those small little scenes that just really get you in. And the score, too. Mm-hmm. The score on those Superman cartoons will just get you into anything at all.
Yeah, you could probably drive along listening to those and get all revved up, you know, like, wow, yeah, you know.
Ah, definitely, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, today, the music in that Ultimate Adventures didn't really captivate me at all. It just was there, you know. With the Spider-Man from the 90s, I used to hum that theme all the time. It, you know, it was a bit crazy, but and the X-Men from the 90s too. That you know, it sticks with you. But these days, I mean, what do you get? Teen Titans. You know, that doesn't really stick with you too much. I don't know.
I have to admit, if when one of the podcasts, Drew's podcast about movies.
Yeah,
he was using Teen Titans at the beginning, and yeah. I would listen to his podcast, you know, and then for the rest of the day, maybe 2 days, that Teen Titans theme song would run through my head. So he finally stopped using it, and after about a month, I emailed him and I said, Drew, bring back the Teen Titans theme song. So he put it in for one more episode, but I missed it, you know.
Oh, man. I guess to each their own there. But, I mean, do kids today, I mean, do they actually, I mean, are they drawn in more to the animation than to the little things like we were? I mean, would you be able to sit them down? Would they be humming the theme afterwards? I mean, that's the question, because I don't really feel that that's nearly as much a part of these new releases as it were in the old releases.
I don't think kids have changed. I think as long as the cartoon's got a lot of action in it, kids, mm-hmm. kids get bored when they don't have when there's not something happening.
Sure.
You know, so again, if there's talking heads, they're going to get bored and they're going to, you know, can we put a different DVD in? You know.
Yeah.
Maybe they have less patience than we did. I don't really know. You know.
Well, when they play video games, a lot of people say that they have less patience, but it takes a lot of patience to get through some of those video games. So I have no idea what people are talking about with that, but.
Good point.
What's your biggest guilty pleasure when it comes to cartoons? What do you still watch today that you can't believe you still watch?
Oh gosh, you know, I think cartoons, I think classic Warner Brothers and that kind of thing. You know, they're not superhero cartoons.
Yeah.
You know? But mm-hmm. I can still sit and watch a Warner, as long as it's not the Saturday morning versions where they've actually. You know, or Tom and Jerry, for instance, you know, Jerry's about to hit Tom over the head with a bat, and suddenly there's a cut, and you don't even know what happened, that they actually cut all the violence out of it.
Beautiful.
Why would you bother? Don't even show it to me. You know, don't destroy a classic piece of animation.
Of course,
because,
yeah.
Because, the kids may get the idea of bashing it. You know what? If you haven't taught your kids better than that, shame on you.
Just hide your giant mallets and you're good.
Well, absolutely. You know, I put all my mallets away, you know.
Exactly. Please. And that's what gets me, too, about, you know, the fact that even in the 90s with the Bruce Timm Batman, you were not allowed to show a lot of the violence that you're able to show in cartoons today, and they still captivated me. I mean, I believe there was a rule that you couldn't show anybody shooting a gun. You could show the gun, but you couldn't show them shooting the gun.
Uh-huh.
And nobody could get shot. Even if there was a bullet, they couldn't get shot, and there couldn't be any blood. And the Batman Timverse one, that got everything done without showing anything like that. Today, however, violence a lot more apparent. Especially with that Ultimate Avengers. There were a lot of stuff that would have never gotten away with even 10 years ago. So the standards are definitely changing with the world of violence when it comes to stuff like that. But I don't know. I mean, if you put it out on DVD, you can get away with anything these days.
Well, I guess it's like humor, you know. There's certain comedians that say, oh, I can't work if I can't work blue.
Sure.
And then there's other comedians that, you know, you get to the end of listening to, you know, a half an hour, 45-minute set, and you say, you know, that guy didn't say one. Well, maybe he didn't curse once. I won't say, you know, I mean, they usually get maybe off color a little bit. But, you know, I think it's the same with animation. You know, you don't have to shoot people. You can still tell a good story because, well, we know this because we watched those Batman cartoons back in, you know, the 90s, you know, right on up. You know, now that you mention it, okay, yeah, I guess they didn't shoot each other. It hadn't even occurred to me, to tell you the truth.
Exactly, because it was implied.
Stories, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, but the mind can do a lot of things.
That's true.
As long as you're implying that something is happening, you're going to forget that it didn't even happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. My guilty pleasure when it comes to animated cartoons, especially when it comes to, like, animated cartoons that are superhero cartoons, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Matt mentioned it earlier. It's the cheesiest thing in the world, but I can still watch that if it's on. You know, I could just sit down and just veg out and watch stuff like that. That and the Super Friends. because, oh my God, is the Super Friends the most cheesiest thing ever made? But it still does it, you know, yeah. with the whole Wendy and Marvin and, you know, Zan and Jaina, Apache Chief. That's in Black Vulcan. What a terrible, terrible name for a hero to this day. I mean, you're not saying anything with that name whatsoever. And yet, hey, I do lightning. I'm Black Vulcan. No, seriously, I am. Look at me. Yeah. But it reminds me of the Silver Age. You know, because I've read plenty of Silver Age comics and back issue bins and all that. And it still has that appeal to me. Show a kid today the Super Friends, and he'll want to turn on Justice League Unlimited, I guarantee you, because it's just way too cheesy for today's audience. But it still has that appeal to people who watched it once upon a time.
Mm-hmm. But, I wonder about that, though, because Scooby-Doo, they just keep running it and running it and running it. And
but that hasn't changed much.
Well, you know what? And personally, I have never understood the attraction. I think the voice is funny. I think the two, you know, the Scooby-Doo and, was it Marvin? What's his name?
Scooby-Doo, Shaggy.
Shaggy, I'm sorry. Yeah. I get a big kick out of them, listening to them talk. But the stories, you know, don't do anything for me. But the kids still love them.
Yeah.
You know? So, I don't know, you know, it's a good point. Maybe I'll have to find some of those cartoons and show them to my nephews and report back to you.
Yeah, definitely. But also, at the same time, it still amazes me to this day that Casey Kasem voiced Shaggy.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Yeah. You hear his voice on the radio, and you hear Shaggy, and there's no comparison to it whatsoever.
And how many voices he did actually character, you know, how many characters he did over the years. It's kind of amazing. You know, this is Casey Kasem. You
know? Him and Mark Hamill. You know, Mark Hamill can do a voice, and you'll have no idea it's Mark Hamill until you look at the credits, and holy crap, that's Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
There was a couple of forum comments that I wanted to get to. First one from Heath Holland, who's H Dutch 007 on the forums. We actually just found Comic Timing last episode, so glad to have you aboard, Heath. Here we go. I think comic book animation is a nice little extra. It's just a supplement to comics, and when it's done well, it could be really cool. I don't think it's the future of comics or anything like that, nor do I think it's the replacement for comics, but I think it has its place, can tell stories to an audience who might not otherwise be interested in the story if it were in comic form only, like Darwin Cook's New Frontier, and makes a nice book end to a classic story. Projects like Hellboy Sword of Storms are very nice to have, but it really comes down to what works better on page and what works better on screen. A good writer should know the difference. So in the future, I'd like to see more animated comic stories, but only if the quality can parallel the stories that they are adapted from and bring a new angle. But if they all went away, I wouldn't be terribly sad because they aren't a substitute for comics. And that's Heath Holland. And he does make a good point there. They're a comparison piece. You shouldn't have to choose one over the other.
Right.
Yeah. And actually, that actually reminded me of something that I wanted to ask you before we get to JLA fans' comments. What do you think of the tie-ins, as it were? Stuff like the Justice League Adventures and the Batman Adventures that came out ages ago. The comic books that are the companion to the DVD, or excuse me, to the animated series, as opposed to the animated series that then has, let me say that again. The animated series that's the companion, that has a companion piece that's a comic book, as opposed to an animated series that's based on a comic book specifically. I mean, these add a lot of story. A lot of times, and some characters, a lot of the times don't even end up in the animated universe, end up in these stories, and they always sell very, very well. So I feel that they're actually kind of key to the animated that come out. If there's a comic companion to it, I say more power to you. What do you think about those?
Well, it's funny, because I had just made a note for myself about animated-style comics to ask you. So,
Well, there we go.
I buy the Justice League Unlimited. I buy Batman Strikes now?
I think so,
but
yeah.
I've bought the various title, Gotham, whatever it was. And
Gotham Adventures.
Gotham Adventures, thank you. And then the Batman Adventures was the first one. And the Superman title. I buy all those, and I enjoy them for what they are. You know, I often hear people talking, you know, well, what kind of comics do you like? I like all kinds of comics, you know. Sometimes I like to read, you know, a Warren Ellis Planetary. Sometimes I like to read just a very simple animated style comic, you know. I'm a big fan of artists that work in a more cartoony or animated style, too. I'm not a real big fan of photorealism. I don't hate it. I mean, I like Brian Hitch, and who's the one that's getting bashed all the right?
Greg Land.
Greg Land. Until somebody pointed it out to me, I hadn't even noticed. But yeah, he does do a lot of pinups, doesn't he?
Yeah, Kirsten Dunst on the cover of that Ultimate Power thing that just came out is very much apparent that that's Jean Grey. So yeah,
yeah. But so I tend towards artists who have a slight cartoony edge towards them. Chris Sprouse comes to mind immediately, although he seems to be going more and more realistic and getting away from the cartoony style. John Romita Jr., I think has a sort of a looser, cartoonier style.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, I think that the books like the Justice League Unlimited, they're just a lot of fun. You can read it. Oh, great story, and you put it away, and there's no baggage, you know. I don't have to remember any kind of history or anything, you know. And not to say that I don't like stories where there's some baggage. I do that, too, you know. But it's nice to have – it's the nice that we have that variety, you know, the different types of comics. How do you feel?
Well, you know what? I picked up a couple of those when I was a kid, and you know what? They are a great way to get a kid into comics, as obviously if they're seeing these comic book animated series on the screen – then what better way to say to them if, you know, say it's at reruns or something like that, you want to continue the story? Here, have a Justice League Adventures comic, or here, have a Batman Adventures comic, or Batman Strikes or something like that. You're getting more story without having to turn on your TV and watch it at a specific time. You can watch this anytime you want, playing out in front of you on the page. So it's a great learning tool. That's number one, because, well, what better early thing to give a kid than a comic book, you know, to get them to learn how to read even. But at the same time, people of all ages can enjoy them. So they're a nice throwaway thing to have, and they're a nice thing to give to your kid when he wants to read a comic book or wants to continue the story, and there's nothing to give him other than all the stories that he's already seen on the screen. So it's definitely a positive, and I want to see these continue in the future. Even if there aren't any more Timverse stuff, you can always continue it on the pages, you know. I mean, they had that Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy miniseries that came out a little while back that Bruce Timm did was absolutely fantastic. I very much enjoyed that. And, you know, it was pretty much an animated series cartoon right there on the comic. So, hey, more of that, the better for me. So that's the way I'm looking at it. So hopefully they'll continue in the future.
Well, how about back, I think it might have been in the 90s, DC revived the MLJ characters like Flyman and several of those. And Mike Parabecki was doing Flyman. And eventually he did the Justice Society in kind of a cartoony style. How did you like that stuff?
I liked it because it appealed to me on that cartoon level, you know, because I've been watching cartoons for ages, and that's one of the reasons why I loved Darwin Cook's art so much, because it's getting that, you know, old-time feel without having to watch it on the screen. Now, of course, I'll get to watch it on the screen, which is just, you know, perfect transition right there. Darwin Cook from the page to Darwin Cook on the screen. There's no reason why that shouldn't happen. Yeah, no, I like the guys who actually do more of a simple animated style. I'll give you an example, actually. You ever read anything by Chinna Cluxton?
No.
Chinna Cluxton, she used to be known as Chinna Cluxton Major. She does stuff mostly for Oni Press. And she does stuff like Blue Monday, which is a teen series that has a very simple, slightly anime-influenced style that's a little cartoony in nature that feels nice and light when you're reading it, and it's very, very well done. Another one that that I read that was similar to that was Hopeless Savages, which is sort of done in the style of an Osborns-type book, and the art on that also is very, very nice and very cartoony, and it doesn't really, you know, you're not like putting stuff out there as it's not photorealistic because it really doesn't have to be. And I like to see that in my creators, definitely. The artist on that, on Hopeless Savages, is Christine Norrie, who I actually met over at the Mocha Festival a little while back, and she does a really great job. So, yeah, no, definitely. The more animated styles I see on comics, the happier I am. If I want to get a little bit of a more, say, like maybe something like a Kubert style, one of his sons, you know, either Andy or Adam, I can go ahead and do that. If I want Jim Lee, I can go ahead and do that. But it's a nice break to see that old style still continues in a lot of comic book artists out there these days. So, hey, be as cartoony as you want. I'm not going to care.
I was just curious. Yeah, I always wonder if it's a generational thing or it's just personal taste, you know.
Yeah, well, if you've ever watched a cartoon, you don't mind seeing it out there on the paper. That's the way I see it. So, you know, just give me a bunch of different styles, and I'll be a happy guy.
Exactly.
Yeah. We have one from JOA fan here who put a very nice detailed post, and actually right afterwards, Heath Holland posted back, "After Bob's well-stated post, I'm never posting again." But here we go with that. Answering the first question of what place does animation have in the market today when pertaining to comic books, he says, "Tie-ins to existing comic book properties seem to be gaining in popularity more and more in recent years. Batman, JLA, the upcoming Legion, Fantastic Four, etc., the direct-to-video market also, with the recent Ultimate Avengers stuff. I think things like the Avengers products actually have a direct way of appealing to an entirely new audience who can maybe cross over to the comics, especially when they package a little comic in with the DVD to get people used to seeing the paper versions." And that's similar to what we were talking about with the Justice League Adventures and stuff like that, where there can be crossover from the animated to the comics and comics to the animated. So mm-hmm. I can certainly understand what he's saying there. To the question of would you rather watch an animation with a comic book tie-in or a comic book with an animation tie-in, he says, "I personally like to see things that started in the comic book and get revisioned as animation. The addition of the movement and sound is nice to see when done well, but heck, I even enjoy the crappy limited animation of the 1960s Marvel cartoons, who am I kidding?" which goes with what we stated earlier, that if it's animated, it's just fun to see. "What are your favorites, your least favorites, and your guilty pleasures? My favorite of all time are probably the Fleischer Superman cartoons and the Bruce Timm Batman Superman JLA stuff. My least favorite is the new The Batman. I could just not get into the wonky art style on that series." And actually, before I read the rest of that, they did Jackie Chan Adventures before this. And when I saw The Batman without his cape and cowl the first time, I thought to myself, what is Jackie Chan doing in a Batman suit?
Yeah.
And that's not something I want to see. I don't want to see a Bruce Wayne that looks like Jackie Chan, thank you very much. Let's see him looking a bit more like his previous cartoon and comic book iterations, and I'll be a happy boy, so I can certainly see what he's talking about.
Oh, I know. We all refer to it as the Jackie Chan Batman.
Yeah, exactly. And every time I see it, all I think of is Jackie. You know, from the old Jackie Chan Adventures.
And it really wasn't a bad cartoon, by the way.
It wasn't. It was very well done. In fact, I think they did a much better job on that than they did with the Batman. So there you go. And also, a lot of people don't realize this: Jackie Chan didn't voice himself in that cartoon.
No.
It was a guy who, actually, his name is also Jackie, but it was not Jackie Chan himself. He did the little, you know, pieces at the end that were not animated, but the actual Jackie Chan was not voicing himself in Jackie Chan Adventures. So, a little bit of tidbit trivia out there for you. "My guilty pleasure has to be Stripperella." Oh, God. He had to mention that. "Stan, what were you thinking, dude? Was this a way for you to get an excuse to be in the same room as Pamela Anderson a couple times, or what? That being said, the series was fun." Oh, my dear God. Did you watch any Stripperella?
I think I watched one, yeah. It was... what can I say? You know?
Well, yeah, I mean, her breasts were bigger than her face, so, oh, jeez. That one, you can only call that one a guilty pleasure, because there was no substance to that whatsoever. That was just literally, I sort of agree with Bob here. He probably just did that just so he could actually be in the same room as Pamela Anderson, but then again, who wouldn't want that at least once in their life, so, oh, boy. And finally, where do you see this market of comic book animation ending up 10 years down the line? He says, "All of the above, to TV, the internet, and DVD. As long as the stuff is selling, and it seems to be, it will keep getting made and put out there." And that's what Bob Brutale has to say about that, and I thank Bob for joining me for the last episode of Comic Timing. Plenty of fun hearing him talk about manga. So, what do you think about the internet when it comes to comic books? As obviously, that's a new medium, at least a newer medium, but they seem to be getting more and more in the realm of the animated series ending up online first, or having little bits and pieces. Obviously, I believe it was called Gotham Knights, but I'm not entirely certain. I know Batgirl was in it, Harley was in it, and Catwoman was in it. I can't actually think of what it was called.
Oh,
was
I
it
remember
Gotham
those.
Girls?
Yeah.
Gotham Girls, I think it was. Actually, let me take a look.
Yeah,
right
that
now.
Might be it.
Yeah, it is actually Gotham Girls, which was done in Flash animation on the WB website with Batgirl, Catwoman, Harley Quinn, Poison Ivy, and a couple other characters. I think even Montoya shows up at one point. But that one was really well done, and it never got released anywhere other than the internet. So it's certainly a proof that you could just put anything out there, and if you're savvy about the internet, hey, you can go ahead and find it on YouTube or Google Video or somewhere in the depths. I mean, would you be a fan of something that only had an internet iteration as opposed to something that was on the screen?
Yeah, as long as I don't have to watch it on a stupid little iPod screen.
So, in other words, as long as it blows up fine, then you're good.
Yeah, so, blowed up real good.
Oh, yeah. So, when you're saying that, should Marvel think about that for maybe some of their properties that they might want to bring to DVD, perhaps maybe try them out on the internet first, and if they work well on the internet, maybe head on over to DVD?
You know, again, I just think Marvel needs to get a creative team. I mean, they need to get some talent behind their animation division. It just all looks blah, you know? I mean, I enjoyed the Ultimate Avengers. I bought it. I bought both of them. You know, I'm trying to support these projects, you know, when they bring out these different cartoon things, because I figure maybe if I support it and everybody else supports it rather than downloading it for free, you know, we'll get more of it, and that's what I want, you know? But I want it to be good, you know? So, yeah, sure. I mean, if they were to, say, set up a website and say, okay, all you amateur animators or all you you folks that would like to get into animation, you know, send us some Flash animation of, you know, what you think the cartoons or the characters should look like. Have a contest or something, and then, you know, pay those people to make some Flash animations like those Gotham Girls. I mean, you know, at least they'd get some good design. That'd be a wonderful idea.
Well, that actually reminds me that actually WB had a contest like that once upon a time where there was actually a Zatanna short that was produced. I think there were three episodes of it produced for a contest that looked really, really cool. And I think you can still find them online. Also, Lobo had a series that was done online.
Really?
That has about, that I think it can still be found around the internet. It's actually, I believe, Toon Zone's site for the JLA has it. Huh. So, actually, let me take a look at what that actual website is right now. Here we go. World's Finest on Toon Zone has it. So, actually, one more time here. World's Finest. Thank you, Google, for existing. Here we go. World'sFinestOnline.com. Is that it? Let's take a look here. Yes, it is. World'sFinestOnline.com has the pretty much all of the Lobo ones that were produced. They were only online for a short time, so they were pulled down almost immediately after that, and World's Finest caught them before that, so they have them up on their website. So, you know, I mean, it would be really cool to actually have stuff like that to maybe go back on, because it's worked in the past. You've got really fun stories out of Gotham Girls. I was a huge fan of that back in the day, and Lobo and all that. Have something like maybe like for the new Irredeemable Ant-Man that just came out. That could work really well as a Flash animated series online. You know, just have Kirkman as you know, an advisor on it, and put something out similar in the style of Phil Hester, and I'll be a happy guy. So that could be something. And for independent comics, what put a better place to turn to the internet to put maybe an animated series out there for you?
Yeah, sure.
You might not have the money to put it out as a regular, so.
Yeah.
Did you watch any of those? I think it was, let's see here. Malibu had their, what was the name of their big series with Prime and all the others, the team? I can't think of what it was actually called. Ultra Force, there we go. Yeah, there was an Ultra Force cartoon back in the 90s, and there was also a Savage Dragon cartoon. You happen to catch those anytime?
You know, now that you mention it, I do remember Savage Dragon.
What'd you think about that?
Were they together on one show?
They were. They were on. Well, no, they weren't together on one show. They were back to back on USA. USA used to show Wildcats, which I can't believe there was ever an animated series of that. Ultra Force and Savage Dragon, all on the same block, and they throw in a really crappy Mortal Kombat cartoon in there also. Mm. No, those were decent enough, but they didn't stick to the story on Savage Dragon. It was almost a totally different iteration. The version that came out was very kidified. You know, they didn't stick with a lot of what was introduced in the Savage Dragon comics. Mm-hmm. That's why a lot of fans of the Savage Dragon comics were not a fan of the series. So, in fact, even I think, if I remember correctly, Eric Larson really frowns upon the animated series. So, I don't know, but I kind of liked it when I was a kid. I don't know if I'd like it now, but yeah, who knows?
I couldn't even comment because I just don't remember.
Yeah. Oh, and Wildcats was terrible. just got to say that out there, because that was literally like you put a animation budget of 15 cents on something and you'll get Wildcats, because they reused way too many frames. They tried to ape the style of the X-Men animated series, and it really did not work at all. But I'm sure there's at least one fan of that series out there somewhere hiding, not wanting to reveal himself. So any final thoughts on comic book animation before we wrap things up here?
I pretty much I made a few notes here, but I kind of got them out there while we were talking. So,
well,
superheroes in animation, in particular, you mean?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because I'm thinking just to sort of to ape what we said before. If you give something to us with good animation plus good story plus good character design, and we will all be happy. But whether you're a kid, whether you're older, whether you're a teenager, whether you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, it doesn't matter. Put a good product out there, and we'll go ahead and do it. If you want to make something cheap that only lasts for about 5 or 10 minutes, then it's only going to last 5 or 10 minutes, and everybody's going to forget about it, and you're just going to go to the wayside. So give us something we can remember for years, like what DC's doing now with their animated movies, because I have a feeling those will be around for years to come.
Right.
Yeah. All right, so I think we did a good job here, so I certainly want to thank you for joining us, Bruce, as that was definitely plenty of fun, and would love to have you back on here sometime soon.
Yeah. And, gee, it'd be nice to get together in person one of these days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, really. Wait. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on here. In fact, Bruce will be at the episode, what is it, episode 200. Yeah, there you go, episode 200. Oh, yeah, I forgot it was 200 episodes. Yeah, how about that? It'll be 1,000 before we know it, but episode 200 of Comic Geek Speak is this upcoming weekend. I'm only going to be there for the Saturday. Day, but you're going to be there the full weekend. I know that. You're going to be there Friday, Saturday,
I was
right?
thinking about going Friday, but it sounds like till they get dinner and everything, it might be like 8 or 9 o'clock. And, you know, by Friday, I'm usually so fried from driving back and, you know, commuting back and forth into Jersey. I'm trying to decide whether I'm actually going to go there tomorrow night or not. But We'll see.
Well, we're taking the New York carpool, as it were, the mighty New York Avengers coming in from Manhattan with a rented car and all that. So,
oh, okay, so you're coming in from the United States, not Long Island.
Yes, actually. That is 100% correct. Long Island and you know, Afghanistan, we're not coming from there. So Long Island doesn't exist, but hey, technically I live on Long Island, but we're the good part of Long Island. We're the part that's actually part of New York City.
I have nothing. It's just so funny because those of us west of Long Island think of it as like a foreign country.
And, exactly.
And the people on Long Island think of the rest of the world as like some foreign land. You know.
That's why people in Brooklyn and Queens never mention that we're actually part of Long Island, because we're not. We're on the same island, but it's like a completely different area. It's like the boondocks compared to here. But yeah, no, but I'll definitely be at episode 200. We'll probably be there by about 10 or 11 or something along those lines, because we're going to leave at about 8 o'clock in the morning. So it'll be a nice fun adventure, and as long as I'm not driving, then I'm good. So, but I want to thank you yet again for bringing me to episode 100, as otherwise I would have been stranded there. It was fun waiting for that that train
If I wasn't such a coward, I could have just driven you into Manhattan. But
please, that would have been 3 hours right there, man. I don't want to do that to you, man. Come on.
I did it one time, and I really don't ever want to do that again.
Yeah. Well, David will be coming also. He'll be taking his full route out there, so the whole crowd that was in the car that time will be there, David Price and you and me. You got anything upcoming on ComicsCast you want to plug?
I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to my last two episodes, but I do have a co-host now. His name is Stefan. He said to keep his last name on the QT for the time being. He wants to be mysterious and all, but he's actually from the West Coast. We get together, and I couldn't probably find a better person. He's got a really good mind. He's just very quick with things, which I'm not. You know, I'm the typical Pennsylvania Dutchman. I'm da da da. You know, but he's very quick with things. Very talented. If you go to the Comics Podcast Crossover website, he did a little animation there. That's just so cool.
That was him. Okay.
Yeah. And he's a musician. He sent me some of his music, and it's just, you know, he's just really good and great artist. Just a fun person to have as a co-host. So I'm really looking forward to upcoming episodes. I got to figure out how to deal with some of the sound issues that I'm having. But
you're using Skype also, right?
Right.
Yeah, Skype is my mistress right now. Yeah. We every now and then, you know, we're on good terms, but we get in a fight, and before I know it, you know, everything's out of sync and everything sounds wrong. But yeah, it's a fickle beast. Skype is a fickle beast, as I'm learning very well. So still the lost Steve Bryan episode that I'll never get back. But are you going to be at New York Comic Con?
Yes, I guess I am.
Excellent. And are you going to be in the podcast arena?
Yes, I am.
Glad I mentioned that then, because Comic Timing is brought to you by the New York Comic Con. New York Comic Con is bigger, better, and has double the space with more gaming and anime for 2007. Come to the Jacob Javits Center February 23rd to 25th and experience the biggest pop culture event in New York City featuring comics, anime, manga, graphic novels, video games, trading card games, RPG, MMOs, toys, movies, TV, celebrities, and more. Guest of honor includes Stan Lee, Jeff Smith, J. Michael Straczynski, and George Perez, with many more to be announced. For a complete list of guests, as well as show information, visit nycomiccon.com. Buy your tickets online now to ensure your spot for the 2007 show. Tickets are available now at a discounted rate for advanced purchases at nycomiccon.com. You can also book your travel arrangements online now on the travel page of the website. Don't miss out
on the 2007 New York Comic Con. Visit our website
to get all the information you need. Oh, beautiful. Thank you very much, man. See, it's always great when you're doing it in tandem. Then it just feels even more super there. But you had to throw that in there, or else New York Comic Con would come and find me with their steak. So, forgot to mention, thank you very much for bringing together the Comics Podcast crossover. I got to say, that's been a lot of fun to be a part of. And definitely the horror episode that just came out, I loved listening to it because of the wide range of horror books that were covered. And, you know, dude, it's really great getting all the podcasts together to get something like that going.
I think that was my favorite so far. It's almost 2 hours, and it went by like that. It was, boom, it was over. It's like, oh, man, I need more, you know?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you with that, because it was fun also getting together that that segment on Monster, because, well, Matt and I both love Monster, and anytime Matt can talk about Monster, he's happy, so... Yeah. All went well there. So definitely thank you for that. What's the, once again, the website for Comics Podcast Crossover is?
ComicsPodcastCrossover.libsyn.com.
And Comics Cast is found at?
ComicsCast.libsyn.com, and that's Comics and Cast with a K.
Yes, just in case people forget. So there's your plugs in there, and now let me get my plugs in here. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums over at cgspodcast.com/forum, which are graciously hosted by the Comic Geeks Speak guys. They are now one away from episode 200, and you can find them at comicgeekspeak.com. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. Please give us an iTunes review on iTunes. That would be graciously appreciated. And don't forget that coming up in, I believe it's going to be 2 weeks from now. It could possibly be next week. We're working that out. But there will be a crossover between Comic Timing and Raging Bullets, as Raging Bullets will be joining us here on Comic Timing for our 22 pages number 2 on Superman Confidential number 1. So Jim and Sean will be joining Matt and myself for that, and then we will be on Raging Bullets once Batman Confidential number 1 comes out to review Batman Confidential. So it's a confidential crossover for Comic Timing and Raging Bullets. Certainly check out Raging Bullets over at RagingBullets.com. And other than that, not too much else. So once again, please listen to That's What She Said. That's What She Said. Libsyn.com to give Matt his final plug, as he's probably 17 minutes past watching The Office now. So he's a happy man. Bruce, once again, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for joining us here. It's been a lot of fun, and you're always fun to talk to.
Yeah, you too.
All right. And as always, there's always time for comics. Excellent. And it's pretty much about an hour and 45 minutes, so that should pan out pretty well. That'll keep them yearning until I actually put out one next week.
That'll keep the little buggers happy.
Yeah, bastards. Jeez.